This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, everyone. I am Ben Johnson, and this is the Perpetual Chess Podcast. Perpetual Chess is a weekly chess interview show with accomplished chess players, authors, personalities, and adult improvers where they discuss their lives, their careers, and share tips about how to improve at chess. For more information, go to PerpetualChessPod.com. So without further ado, let's get to the show. Hello, everyone. We have a great conversation with WGM Tatar Rabrahamian coming your way. One thing I forgot to mention in the intro is that we do not discuss the ongoing World Chess Championship in our interview. This was recorded in advance. And of course, on Perpetual Chess, we strive to have evergreen content. So we discuss a wide variety of chess-related topics. It's a fascinating interview. But if you want up-to-the-minute coverage of the World Championship, then check out our bonus content as well as the many excellent features on YouTube and elsewhere. So without further ado, let's get to our interview with Tatyev. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Perpetual Chess. We are joined this week by a returning guest, an old, longtime friend of Perpetual Chess, one of the strongest female players in the U.S. She is Armenian by birth. She emigrated to Southern California as a teen, which you can hear all about in episode 49. She spent years as a, of course, professional chess player and trainer, but she's recently moved to Kansas City, Missouri to work with a chess startup called Bright Labs. Levon Aronian is a spokesman for the company, her fellow Armenian turned American, of course, and she's been working on designing a curriculum for them. She recently competed in the U.S. Women's Championship and the World Cup, and we'll be discussing all of these events. But first, let's welcome her back to the show. Tatyev Abrahamian, how are you, Tatyev?
Oh, thanks for the welcome. I'm doing well. How are you?
Pretty good. I mean, as I mentioned before we're recording, my kids wore me out, but I'm going to try to buck up for this interview and find my energy, and you'll be doing the heavy lifting anyway. So should be good to go, but I'm ready to dive into some chess. So Tatyev, the first topic that I had in mind for us to discuss is something that came up recently on Twitter. Grandmaster Johan Sebastian Christensen, pretty well-known Norwegian player. He works as the second as Jordan Van Forest, who of course had that amazing result in Wiken Zee last year. But he tweeted something that I felt like really resonated with a lot of people and top players in particular. And I saw you respond to him. So you're on the hook for discussing it. So first let me share what he tweeted, which was, recently, he said, this was on October 30th, 2021. I've worked so hard every single day for many, many years to reach the 2600 plus level, and to see my rating drop from 2620 to 2560 in the last 3 months is so heartbreaking and brutal that I'm lost for words. I've never felt such emptiness and disappointment in my entire life. And there have been updates since then. Glad to report he said he's felt a little bit better. But Tatya, have you had a heartfelt response to that, where you said, it's so rare to see such vulnerability and honesty from a member of our community, even though most can relate to this completely. All the best as you work through your feelings and continue to persevere. And I know that Grandmaster Christensen subsequently said he got a lot of messages like that. I certainly, you know, being nowhere near his level, but just, you know, someone who's competed in chess could empathize. And I think a lot of people felt that way. But how did it land with you when you saw that? I was really touched by your reply, Tatya.
Well, I mean, it's like something you can just feel in your bones because it's just so relatable. And chess is just so personal and can be so absolutely heartbreaking that, you know, you just try your hardest and try to do your best. And you, like, not even in your career, you play like a 6-hour game and then you make some stupid mistake and you lose. And it's just so heartbreaking. And there's really no one who can share your, I mean, okay, other chess players can share your pain with you, but it's just all on you. And you're the one who has to work through it. And I mean, the reason I said what I said is because I think like a lot of well-meaning people you know, when you feel, you see someone in pain, your reaction is to try to like comfort them. So a lot of people are like, oh, you'll bounce back and you'll recover. It's just a setback. It's normal. It happens to everyone. And that's true. But I think when you're sharing your pain and you're being so vulnerable, I think you should be allowed to like feel your feelings and not have them like dismissed or immediately just be like, oh, everything's going to work out. So I think if he was willing to be so vulnerable, then we should give him the space to do that.
Yeah, it was a touching reply. And I certainly find myself in the category that you're describing. It's similar if someone suffers a loss, you know, in life, a close one passes away or something like that. Often it's like you want to express sympathy, mm-hmm. but you just don't know what to say. Now, obviously, a chest slump is not on that level, but as you say, you really do feel it. It really feels intensely personal. And again, I'm not a player like at your level or at Johan's level. So I can't imagine when you put even more work into it and feel like people are watching and rooting for you. Like I just can't imagine. So it was nice to see that. And I am happy to report that this episode we're recording a couple weeks in advance, but a few days before, or rather this will be released a few weeks from when we're recording, but a couple days before we recorded, he's just about starting the European team championship. And he tweeted, I want to thank everyone who commented on my post and sent me messages. I read all of them. It was a big surprise to see such big support from many different people from so many countries, both chess players and non-chess players. Thank you. So it sounded like he was in a better mental space at least, but yeah, I just wanted to discuss that because I know, you know, there's a lot of, even for just casual players playing on the weekend, the feeling of devastation can be, so raw.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even think you need to be a chess player to feel it. Like if you think about it, like I spent the whole year preparing for the bar exam and I failed, like not me, but like someone who did, right? I mean, it's devastating, like dedicating yourself to something and then you feel like you failed. And obviously, if you fail at a bar, everyone will be like, oh, you'll pass the next time. But, you know, that's the feeling of failure and the letdown is so real. And I know he mentioned he has some health issues. So obviously, that's more of a priority. So I hope that's really taken care of and he's on the mend.
Yeah, I hope so as well. And just want to be clear, obviously, I also commend Grandmaster Christensen for his openness. And, you know, it made me, obviously, I mean, I was familiar with him and, you know, I'm not predisposed to root against anyone, but I didn't have any sort of personal, like, stake in his results. But now he's definitely like someone I'll be rooting for just because having seen that vulnerability and finding it so relatable. Definitely be tracking him and hoping that he can pull himself up. Although, as you say, I mean, with the exception of Ali Reza, who says that chess is good for mental health.
chess is good for mental health. I think it's more in the lines with, like, if you play chess, you won't get Alzheimer's, right? And then if you play chess, right, you will cure your depression. Of course, like, people ran with it because it just sounds like something to me. Right, kind of,
yeah.
But I mean, okay, English is like his like second or third language, so.
Yeah, and we should say his English is quite good, and what we're referring to is Ali Reza Farrugia, and we haven't talked about this on the podcast yet, but he recently, after winning the candidates, talked about how much he loved chess, and one of the things he said was that it's good for your mental health. And as Tatyev says, I think that what he meant was like, it can be good for your mental longevity. It's good for staying sharp. But as Tatyev said, at least online, it seemed like a lot of people were having some fun with that because they're like, it's not good for my mental health the way that I get upset when I lose. But you know, when you're the an amazing talent like Ali Reza, with a chance to be the youngest world champion in history if he can win the candidates and then win against either Nepomniachtchi or Carlsen in the next world championship, then you could see why I said that. But yeah, mainly it was just amusing. But yeah, it's hopefully, you know, it's hard because you have these, the down moments are often greater than the up moments. So that overall can make balance tough to find when you're competing. What about you, Tatyov? I mean, obviously you've had great successes and I'm sure some disappointments. Do you, has that been your experience?
I mean, I can't think of any great successes. No, I mean, the downs in chess, they're just so horrible. Like, you know, the thing is when, like, you're doing well and, you know, you're having good tournament after good tournament. Okay, again, like, I don't remember what this is like anymore. But, like, it becomes like you're normal and then you're like, yeah, I'm this strong and you expect it. But when you're doing poorly, it's just... it's just so heartbreaking. It just hurts so much on so many different levels, like emotionally and mentally. It's just such a terrible experience. But I think that's like in any way, like when your life improves or you improve as a person or something, you know, you have this like slow improvements and then you kind of get used to them and they become the norm. So it's kind of hard to put things in perspective sometimes.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, has a bad tournament, he's not gonna say, "Oh, I'm this amazing player," and like I've broken record, and he's just gonna feel bad, right? Like he's not gonna look at his career as a whole and be like, you know, like I'm just so great and like I'm so inspiring, and you know, my mental health is amazing because I played it. It's right. Horrible.
Yeah, I mean, he already said he doesn't think he has a chance to emerge from the upcoming candidates, which, you know, he's like the only one who doesn't think he has a chance, I think. But yeah. But anyway, Tatyov, let's thank you for being willing to discuss that. I just felt like it was important because a lot of people probably find it relatable. But let's tie it into your own recent chess tournament. So. Mm-hmm. You know, most recently, your big event was the U.S. Women's Championship. I know that you lost your first couple games and then made a strong finish, and I believe you finished tied for fourth. So how do you reflect on that tournament, Tatyov?
Yeah, it was a very difficult tournament, and I knew it was going to be a difficult one. I was actually considering dropping out of the tournament a few weeks before. It was just, like, my life was so chaotic. I hadn't just moved, that was my second month living in Kansas City, but I had, when I first got here, I was at Airbnb for like 4 or 5 weeks while I was looking for a place. I didn't want to rush with that. So I was just moving to my new place and I was like in the middle of it. I had like no furniture and like I just had a mattress sleeping on the floor while waiting for my other stuff. And I had something else personally happen that was like really devastating, and I was just thinking of not playing, and it would be my first time actually missing the U.S. Championship. So it was a big decision for me, and my work was very supportive of me. And I talked to my coach, and he was like, he was kind of also kind of understanding, but it was like, you know, it's the U.S. Championship, we can prepare and just have a tournament and like play a decent tournament. And the thing about the U.S. Championship, there's just so much around it. It's not like, you know, I go to a tournament and I just play it. There's just so much media and so much attention. If you're having bad tournament, kind of can become a story and you can't just bail on the tournament. You have to be there. And we had 2 days off this year and like opening, closing. So it's just like this really long event. And just beforehand, I wasn't even sure I could emotionally handle it. So that was that. But eventually I decided to go play. I was like, how can I miss it? And I also took a week off before to prepare. But yeah, I mean, the tournament started just horrible for me. Like, I lost the first game, which was like one of the most humiliating losses of my chess career. And the fact that this game is going to be in the database, my name forever attached to me, is just so horrible to me.
Was that the game against Carissa Yip?
No, it was the game against Big Game.
Okay.
When I was just winning, at some point I have checkmate, and then I don't know how to describe it. It's just my brain just stopped working and my brain just turned off. I just couldn't see anything and ended up losing. It was just really embarrassing. And yeah, the second game I lost to Carissa, and then it was just like 0 out of 2. It's not what I'm used to. Usually, you know, I'm like fighting for top prizes, but after 0 out of 2, I'm losing to Carissa, who's like a clearly a contender and young, up and coming. Probably like, I mean, she was the strongest player in the tournament. So I obviously that like put all my hopes, any kind of hopes I could have had, even though realistically I didn't have any hopes. So yeah, that was really tough. So that night after the game, I talked to my coach Alejandro, and then he was just like, you know, just go for a walk. And he gave me like a list of questions to think about, like, why do you still play chess? Like, think about of your good events, think about like your bad events, like what went wrong, what went right. And so I was just kind of reflecting back on my game. And then next morning, he was just like, okay, we're taking a different approach. Like, this tournament is a disaster. Like, because Carissa played some line. I mean, the way she plays chess, she just, you know, she just plays so freely and so confidently. So she just plays some line. And then at some point, she kind of lost the thread of the game a bit. But she was playing fast and she was playing confidently. And then she surprises me in the French, which is unpleasant to get surprised in my own opening. And I have no time, so I end up losing. Yeah, so then he was just like, you know, your repertoire just doesn't stand anymore. Like, you cannot rely on your past knowledge. You haven't been working. I mean, these are the things that are true, but are so unpleasant to hear.
Yeah.
So then he was like, you know, like, I was playing on as a Tanskin. It's like, you're going to play knight f3 today. And then he was like, you know, you're just going to have to listen and, like, trust everything I say. So I was like, fine, whatever. So we look at some structure. So I play the first time, like, ever in a tournament game, I play something that's not e4. So we play... We play this line. Okay, so we play some kind of a game, and, you know, a lot of things happen. Eventually, I end up winning. So, like, 1 out of 3. And then, again, I kind of mentally back, like, fell back into bad habits because I was like, okay, I have 1 out of 3. And then immediately I was like, okay.
Let me stop you for a sec, Tatya, because you're going through the whole tournament and I already have so many follow-ups. So.
Okay, go ahead. I mean, I can stop after the, because after the fourth round, we had a day off, so I can just say, and then we can stop.
Okay, let's hear the fourth then.
Yeah, no, I mean, the thing is, like, again, like, I had a 1 out of 3, and then, like, I just couldn't let go of this first game, and I was like, if I was 2 out of 3, I think I would have been tied for first. At 1 out of 3, I was still middle of the pack, and I was like, oh, if I can manage to win a few games in a row, then, like, I'm recovering, and then immediately I lose my fourth round game, and again, just, like, fallbacks, and, like, I just end, like, the first portion of, like, 1 out of 4.
Yeah.
So I'm in last place after four rounds.
Yeah, frustrating, but you did have a strong finish. Now, before we carry it forward, as you say, at that point, you probably knew, okay, I'm probably not going to win the tournament this year. But with the questions that Grandmaster Alejandro Ramirez gave you, your coach, to ask yourself, such as, why do you still play chess? If you don't mind sharing, like, what did you come up with? Because, I mean, apropos of our earlier conversations, it is something that, like, when we're down, we all wonder.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, it's actually a good question because, unlike my day off, again, like, I went, so after the fourth round, I went for a walk. Because where the hotel is, there's a really nice park and a nice zoo. So I went to the zoo. I was like, okay, I'm going to go visit the penguins that always,
of course, yeah.
So I was actually listening to your podcast with Lawrence Trent, and, like, he was also talking about it. And, like, I also appreciated his honesty. It's like, you know, when you play chess for a long time and sometimes, you know, you just do it out of habit and, like, you kind of lose your love for the game. So I was also, like, thinking about it. I was like, why do I, like, do I still love this game? Do I just play it because it's something I've been doing and for, like, forever? And, like, why am I doing any of this? But, and then I just started thinking of, I think, like, so I sent an email as a response, and I think I said, cause I had, like, was thinking of a good tournament, and I think I was like, cause the highs just feel so good.
Well, that's good. Yeah. that's something. And were there any other sort of, like, insightful questions that Alejandro had given you that you mulled over in that, moment of despair?
No, I think he just gave me like 4 or 5. Like, I think it was just, I think part of it was to try to recreate, like, good tournaments and what was, like, like to reflect back on good tournaments and what went right and like try to recreate that and think about bad tournaments and what like what went wrong in those bad tournaments. There was like many to choose from.
You're too modest. You're a very accomplished chess player, but the problem is you're playing all these other monsters, so it skews your perspective. But could you say a little more, Tatyev, about what you describe about the media environment? I mean, obviously, we all know that Christian Carrillo and Yaz and Maurice are announcing, and there's probably like some language in the contract to do interviews after the games. But what else do you experience that makes it different from a typical tournament when you're playing in the U.S. Championship in St. Louis?
It's just a stressful tournament. It's more stressful. Okay, I think the Olympiad is much stressful. Maybe the World Cup is also very stressful. But it's just, I mean, the title, of course, because I've been playing it for so many times and come so close to winning and never managed. And like, obviously, a high prize fund. And yeah, it's just like all the attention around it. And it's like probably the most special tournament of the year I play. And like there's another tournament where I show up and there's just so much attention to it and where I get treated as well. It just everything makes it so much more stressful.
And are you getting, obviously you have a lot of friends in the chess world. Are you getting a lot of like texts and messages from people that you don't necessarily hear from all the time during a tournament like that?
When I was like 0 out of 2, one of my friends messaged me and it was like, this is why you took a full-time job.
that's harsh.
So every time I would have a blade game, it was like, just remember you have a job.
Right. Which, and to be clear, chess gave you that job. So, you gotta give credit where it's due. So, okay, let's pick it up in round five. So you managed to pick yourself up and finish with a plus score. So what shifted for you, Tatyev?
So then, I mean, the tournament had like three parts. It was four rounds a day off, four rounds a day off, and then the last three rounds. And then we came up with this. So, I mean, we always had this rule. I mean, I've never followed it closely, but like I think a lot of people have this rule, like 10 minutes per move. Because like time travel in this tournament is so prominent, and I think whoever manages their time well is like the person usually wins or at least does really well, because it's just everyone gets in time travel. And it's just the time control somehow feels very, very fast.
What is the time control?
It's 90. I mean, it's like, I think normal time control, it just feels very fast. So it's like 40, 90 plus 30 seconds and then 30 until then.
It does feel faster with the increment. Like, when we were younger, it was more common to have like 40 moves in 2 hours without an increment. But something about, at the weekend tournaments I've played recently, it tends to be 40-80, which is even a tad faster. But even 40-90, yeah, it does. I mean, you get down under an hour very quickly, and then it just feels like an action game, you know, because it's easy to forget about the increment or the delay. It was increment, right?
Yeah, it's increment. But I also think I think FIDE tournaments are 1400. And like 10 minutes doesn't sound like a lot, but it is.
Yeah, especially as you say. I mean, you're not like in peak form. Like you've been working, you know, you've had stuff going on, you've been moving. So it's not like your openings are like razor sharp at the moment, and that makes a big difference.
Yeah. Time just goes by so fast. And like even with this 10-minute rule, like you spend 10 minutes, like three moves, you spend 10 minutes, it's like half an hour. And that's a lot. Like 40 minutes is a lot. Hour and a half is not a lot. It's just so fast.
So 10-minute rule, you're saying never spend more than 10 minutes on a move?
Yeah. And I think a lot of coaches have this rule. And this is just like a good recommendation, right? Like if you spend more than 10 minutes on a move, then like just make a decision because you're already going in the wrong direction. I mean, it's a very general rule. Obviously, sometimes you really have to dive deep into a position and like really think. But I think that's kind of a general rule. If you're over 10 minutes, you're already make your decision because you're already going in the wrong on a dark path.
Yeah, makes sense. Well, I want to talk. There's a bunch of topics I want to get to, Tatyev. So before we move on from the U.S. Mm-hmm. Women's Championship, is there anything else you'd like to share? Any other like big picture reflections about it?
Yeah, actually, so we moved on. So actually, this rule turned in from 10 minutes to 5 minutes. It was like 5 minutes, make a move. I mean, I broke this rule many times, but I did stick to it more often than not. So I think that gave me a lot of confidence, like knowing that in 5 minutes I can make a decision and my decision is not like horrible. And so like, yeah, then I made four draws and then like I just got my confidence back. And I think that was a big factor for me to just play more confidently. And like I won my rounds 9 and 10. And then last round I was playing against Crush. And then, you know, I felt like that was kind of my test because it just historically been such a problematic opponent for me. And I was like, if I can, and I'm black against her in the last round and she's kind of has to beat me because she was competing for second place. And of course there's a big money difference between second and third or tying. So I think that was a comfortable pairing for her. So she was pleased by that. So I was like, okay, like I've managed to do this for the last, I don't know, 7-something rounds or whatever, how many rounds. I was like, this is kind of my test. Like I have to try to do it. And then I actually managed to play quite quickly against her. And like, I don't think, I mean, we did get into some mutual time trouble, but I don't think I was ever really behind on the clock or anything like that. So of course, beating her with black gave me a lot of confidence. And if this round happened, if this was like the first round and this is how my tournament started, obviously it would have taken a different course. So I actually think this tournament can be really a turning point of my chess career because I would just sit down and play some new opening and just be okay. And usually I just, if I'm taken out of book quickly or my opponent surprises me, I just get flustered and all these things. But now, you know, like playing new things and just kind of looking over at something and looking, finding some idea and just going and playing, it just gave me so much confidence.
That's great. Yeah. And as you mentioned before we're recording, before we started recording, even though you're working 9 to 5 now for Bright Labs, you are hoping to play in Vegas in December, right? So don't have to wait too long.
Yeah, cool. I mean, I have to prepare somehow. I have to like get my life together and start like finding time for chess. I actually been listening to your Adult Improver series. I was like, I'm trying to get some inspiration for people who also have jobs and are responsibilities on how they fit chess into their schedule.
Oh, thank you, Tatyev. I'm honored. Yeah, there's I mean, everyone has a different recipe. So what do you think that you need to do for yourself?
I mean, well, actually, right now I just have a lot going on because I'm still, I mean, I'm not 100% unpacked, actually. I'm still, like, trying to finish furnishing my apartment, and I'm still trying to get into a 9-to-5 routine. I've been self-employed for so long. I'm so not used to just having a set schedule. I'm still teaching some lessons for our chess academy in LA, the American Chess Academy, so I'm doing some online lessons there. Trying to figure out how to fit like fitness into my routine, my such an important part of my life. And I'm also like, now it's starting to really sink in that I live here because now it's feeling more permanent now that I actually have my place and it's like starting to feel like home. So I'm like, okay, now I have to start finding a community, start to make friends. So like, that's kind of a priority for me. Like if someone invites me to hang out or do something, like I will say yes. So that also takes time, like trying to create bonds with people. So I think there's just a lot going on.
Yeah, I know you were a big fan of Southern Cali, and I got the feeling that there's strong, I mean, not the strongest in the world, but a relatively strong chess community and a strong Armenian community. Is there much of an Armenian community in Kansas City that you're aware of?
I've met a few of them, but it's a bit scattered. Like, cannot compare it to Southern California. I mean, I lived down my building. Everyone in my building was Armenian. I lived down the street from like an Armenian grocery store, Armenian bakery. I mean, okay, like I feel like all of Glendale is like down the street right. from an Armenian bakery. So yeah, I mean, that part has been very difficult, not having access to all things Armenian. But I mean, there's a small community. They're a bit scattered, but I met a few of them and they have introduced me to others. I met a few of them through like Facebook, and I met this woman and then we started talking, and then she asked me, why are you moving? And like, what are you doing? I said, I'm a chess player. And then she was like, oh, my uncle used to be Garry Kasparov's driver.
Wow.
And I was like, what are the chances? So she started telling me all the stories about like how her family worked for Garry Kasparov, and then they're in like Russia, and like she's obviously in the US, but like her uncle and everyone, they eventually moved to Russia. And I was like, wow, it's real world.
Yeah, and my Missouri geography is not amazing. So I as far as I know, it hasn't been reported where Levon Aronian's going to be living, but you know, some have guessed St. Louis. So I was checking to see how close you were to St. Louis, but it's 4 hours. Is my Google Maps right about that?
It's like 3.5 hours. Yeah, I actually drove there for US Champs. It's not a bad drive. I mean, it's not convenient for a weekend drive, but for like if you're going for a week, it's not that far.
Gotcha. All right. Well, Tatia, we got lots more to cover. I want to hear about the World Cup next, but first we're going to take a break and hear from our sponsors. Perpetual Chess is brought to you in part by Chessmood.com. Chessmood was founded in 2018 by Grandmaster Avtek Grigoryan. It's a chess education platform that gives you a structured path to work to improve your chess. For $29 a month, you get instant access to over 200 hours of Grandmaster-prepared video content and includes openings, middle games, and end games. They also have an active online community where you can find training partners and fellow chess enthusiasts. Don't forget to check out their free content. They have a great blog where their grandmasters share their own thoughts on chess improvement. I get it delivered to my inbox. So to learn more about Chessmood and what they offer, be sure to check out their website, chessmood.com.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
And we are back. And Tatia, we actually already interviewed your opponent from the World Cup, Grandmaster Anna Muzychuk. But maybe you could give a better perspective about what that trip was like for you and how your chess was.
Yeah, actually, I listened to that interview. I was curious. I think... like Sochi was great. It's like as a city, it's a resort city. So we weren't by the water. So I thought it wasn't going to be great. So apparently we were like very close to where the last time I played in the World, I guess it was called the World Championship. I don't remember it at all. But we had this like view of the amazing Caucasus Mountains. The food was just great and everything was like super affordable. I actually really like this format, playing someone around my strength. In the first round, I think it's better than just playing like a 20. Obviously, it's better than playing like a 2500. So the first round was very successful for me. My opponent's quite young, some inexperienced. She really surprised me with her prep, but then kind of lost the thread. I won the first game. I managed to win the second game. And then I got paired against Anna Muzychuk. So that was going to be a difficult pairing for me, obviously. And first round, like she talked about, like she was pressing most of the game. And actually, like the second round, we're playing on stage with like Magnus and Fabi. And I was like so stressed out and so nervous. And I was like, I don't want to be playing. I don't want these people looking at my games. And like sometimes I would see like Magnus like walks around and he's just like looking at a game. And I was like, oh my God, can you go away? So I can like play, actually make a move. Because at some point she like captures something and I have to recapture. It's like my only move. And then Magnus is staying there. Like I just cannot make myself move. I was like, please, please leave. So I can recapture this piece and not lose time on my clock. And actually that was the first round when the whole Fabi thing happened, when his opponent was test came back positive. That was a very strange experience. And yeah, I mean, that was a really big missed opportunity for me in game one, and game two is just my thing. Like, obviously it's tough to play for a win. I just really misplayed the opening and I was just worse. And it was just a very one-sided match from that point of view.
Yeah. I mean, it's tough going against one of the top woman players in the world.
I think she finished top four, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and she qualified for the women's candidates, which I believe we're up to 7 of the 8 qualifiers now. Alexandra Goryachkina, Kanera Humpy, Katerina Lagno, Alexandra Kostyanyuk, Tan Zhongyi, Anna Muzychuk, and Tingji Li. And there will be one spot given to the highest rated. So there is a wild card for the women's candidates. So by rating, of course, Goryachkina will be the favorite. I know you've played and encountered a lot of these women, Tatya. What do you think about who is likely to prevail in that match to determine who plays for the World Championship, that tournament rather?
I'm glad that they changed the format, because before it was just so disorganized. It was just such an afterthought. They would have like 2 world championship in 1 year, 1 knockout, 1 match. And I remember once I was asked to write an article, so I was just trying to like research about this format. And I was like, oh my God, none of this makes sense, because it's just, you have 2 world championships and they're completely disconnected from each other, because like the world champion doesn't get really any perks. It was just so chaotic. So I'm glad they finally came up with, I mean, okay, they copied the system of the world championship, but that's fine. So I'm glad they came up with some kind of a more coherent system. I would say Goryachkina is the favorite, but I think I'll be rooting for Kostyanyuk. She's just such a fighter, and she's just, I think she's very inspiring. So I think it'd be cool to see her win. But I think Goryachkina is a clear favorite.
Yeah, and she's really maintaining her level, Kostyanyuk. It's impressive.
Yeah, she dropped her rating quite a bit, and then she had like series of tournaments. She won the World Cup. I mean, this is like her second time winning this tournament. When she won it, it was called the World Championship, but it was the same exact format.
Right.
She's actually won this twice, which is really remarkable. And then she won it without any tie breaks. And then, was it before or after she had another, it was like the European something, she had another good tournament. She's just been like on a roll.
Yeah. And then the last spot will go to the highest rated player. So from what I can see, it likely will be Maria Muzychuk, although I don't know how much that can change. But yeah, I mean, Goryachkina, it was interesting to see her play in the open section of the Grand Swiss. And, you know, she's got, as you say, a significant rating edge with her rating over 2,600. I tried to look if you'd played her. It looked like you've only played her in Title Tuesday. Is that right?
I haven't played her over the board. I don't know about Title Tuesday.
According to my database, you have. I don't even know. You know, who knows if it was her name? It might have been like.
How did you end?
You drew.
It was kind of a weird perpetual, right?
I don't remember that much, but I know. I think it was from this year.
Maybe.
But anyway, I mean, do you have a sense? I mean, have you like played through her games? Do you have a sense of like what her potential is? I mean, it'll be interesting to watch. And obviously, if she's able to win the candidates, to try to win the Women's World Championship.
I haven't. I looked at a couple of her games because she played some games in the NIMZOLAM that I played. So I saw a couple of her games there. And I saw her game against Matilyov in the Russian Russian highest league,
yeah,
Russian championship. Yeah, I don't know what they call it. Yeah, that game was very impressive. I mean, she just seems like a strong 2,650 level player. I mean, I don't know what. I mean, she's still quite young, right? She's like 20.
I think she's 22. Might be 22.
Yeah. I mean, I like that she's playing in like open tournaments. I think that will be very good for her chess, because, I don't know. I think it's like a double-edged sword. They have all these tournaments for women, and obviously they're financially quite helpful, but then it's just this 10, 15 players who just constantly play against each other, and I don't think that's very beneficial in the long term. I mean, I understand why it happens. I'm not being critical of it, but I think it also has a big downside to it.
Yeah, I mean, even in the open events, you know, people complain about that. I mean, it can be, you know, you see the same people play over and over again. And then, as you say, within the women's events, it's a smaller pool of players. So I think it's even more exaggerated.
Yeah, I mean, it's a smaller pool of player. But like, you know, if you think of like top 10 in the world, like Magnus and stuff, it's like they're the highest rated, right? There's like no one better than them. So they're constantly playing each other and you're like, okay, this is like tiring, but they are the best. But then there's so many 25, 50 plus players in the world. So this is like very limiting to just play the same ones over and over.
We are going to take a break and hear from our sponsors, and then we will get right back to our conversation with WGM Tatyev Abrahamian. Perpetual Chess is brought to you in part by our old friends at Chessable.com. Hopefully you know by now about their proprietary move trainer technology that helps you remember tactical patterns as well as opening sequences. Whatever aspect of your game you're looking to work on, there is an excellent chance that Chessable has something for you to help. They're also constantly releasing new courses in the pipeline. Currently, they've got a lifetime repertoire 1E4 from none other than Anish Giri. And they've got the Ginger GM, Simon Williams, soon to release a treatment of legendary Grandmaster Alexei Shirov's Fire on Board, plus so much more. So just be sure to always go to Chessable.com and take a look at what's new. Good news, listeners. According to aimchess.com, I'm now only behind on the clock 75% of the time in my blitz games. That's actually huge progress for me. I'm going to keep working to bring it up, and I recommend you use aimchess.com to address whatever weaknesses you may have in your game, whether it be playing with the white or black pieces, a particular opening, or a particular phase of the game. They give tailored lessons for whatever their algorithm detects, and of course, their algorithm scrapes the games from the major chess playing sites themselves in order to tell you what you need. If you decide to subscribe to aimchess.com after checking it out, be sure to use the promo code perpetual30. Details are in the show notes. Check out aimchess.com.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And we are back. And the internet got spotty there for a second. But Tatya, if you were talking about sort of the unique challenges of the top women chess players playing each other over and over again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So my point was that because, you know, like these tournaments for women, they're also very important tournaments like Grand Prix and World Cup, and they take up so much of the calendar. So a lot of the players just end up playing each other, whereas there's such a big pool of players, 2,500 plus or 2,550 plus, that I think would be beneficial to, you know, be more exposed to these kind of players or even playing 2600s a lot. So that's why I was happy to see Karjatschkina be doing more of this.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see. I know Judith's always a big proponent mm-hmm. of playing open sections. And of course, you mentioned Carissa Yip, who won the U.S. Women's Championship at the age of 18. Very impressive performance. Do you think that she has the potential to reach the level where she could be in the women's candidates? I mean, she's about 2,400 FIDE already.
I mean, she's a very talented player, and I think she has a very good attitude. She's very confident, and she bounces back very well. Like, she lost this game in the U.S. Championships very badly, and then she won, like, four or five in a row. And when she was playing in the Cairns Cup, she lost, like, her first four games, and she managed to bounce back. So that shows really good character. That shows good nerves. I'm sure she was devastated after losing. Okay, like, she was. Who wouldn't be losing four games, especially in this high-level tournament with all this media around it, right? Being covered and everything, but she managed to bounce back. So I think that, like, shows good character, and also she just plays quite confidently. So I think she's just, again, like, at a very tricky age. She's graduating from high school next spring. So if she chooses to pursue chess, I think that she will be very successful. But I don't know which direction her career will go. If she will choose to go to school and go to some Ivy League school, like so many of our top level girls have done, like Jennifer, Annie, and Emily, they've all gone to Ivy League schools, and none of them played this year because of that. So I think that's going to be a major factor in her career.
Yeah. So you're not sure if she's planning on going to university next year.
I mean, I know she's applying, but I don't know where she will eventually end up. Who can know? I don't think she knows either.
Yeah. Yeah. Makes sense. Now, Tati, I have another topic I wanted to talk about was your actual chess startup, your actual company. So I believe your title is director of chess there. What's your day-to-day life like at Bright Labs? And perhaps you could share a little bit about what the company is doing.
Yeah. So I started after the World Cup. So after coming from World Cup, I took a quick trip to Armenia for a couple of days, for like 4 days. And then it was time to come home to LA and pack and move to Kansas City. So our startup, I work for Bright Labs, and, you know, we're making this actual physical chessboard called, the name of it is Chess Up. So it has AI in it that allows you to either play against an AI. You also can use AI assistants and different level of assistance, both for your opponent and yourself. You can play another person over the board. We will have integration with Lichess and chess.com, so you can also play others online. And it's a smart board which helps you, especially when you're playing someone at a different level. Like when you touch a piece, all the legal moves light up according to strength in different colors. So it gives you hints, but, you know, it's still on you to figure out what move do you want to play. So when I first moved, so we're doing these interviews with our backers. So that's what I was doing. So I got to talk to a lot of people who were backing this project because of Kickstarter. It was actually really interesting because I heard from a lot of people who have a connection to chess in a way that's very unusual for me. I would ask people, do you play online? And most of them said no, which was kind of shocking to me because I thought everyone plays chess online. But a lot of people are like, no, I don't like playing online. I just, you know, I like the playing over the board, and which is something I relate to because I also like to play over the board. I like to study on a physical board. And a lot of people said they don't have anyone, like they kind of stopped playing chess because they didn't have anyone to play with. And I guess at some point that was also, a big issue before internet age. So it was really interesting to talk to our backers to understand why they decided to back this project, why they like chess, why they wanted to back this project. And then after that, now I'm just, there's other things that come up here and there, but my main thing is just putting this curriculum together. So I just, this is something that I really care about. You know, when I do something, I want to do it right and I want to do it well. So I spend a lot of time thinking about how to make it so when our users, a lot of them express that they want to improve at chess. And I feel like a lot of people do want to improve at chess, but they don't know how. There is so much information out there, which is great, but it's also overwhelming because, you know, you go on YouTube and you look something up, and if it's not for your level, then it's just frustrating because you just don't understand and you just feel like, you know, it just makes you feel bad. And I talked to some of our backers, and then they would tell me like the books that they're reading, and I was like, in my mind, I was like, oh my God, you should not be reading that. They'd be like, oh, I'm reading Dvoretsky's Endgame Manual. And I'm like, no, yeah. I should not be reading this book. So I think a lot of people, they just... they know there's information out there, but they don't know how to access it, how to do it right for their level. So, I also have some experience in teaching. So I've been really thinking about how to do it so that everyone, regardless of their level, has something for them. So and also based on the conversation with our backers and how they would want things to be done. So the lessons will be through the app. So everyone who... buys a board or has backed the project or can still pre-order it will have access to it. And so I just eventually decided to have a lot of levels, and the levels will go up by 200 point increments. I mean, for my own reference, I've broken down by USF USF ratings. I just want everyone If you don't know how to play chess, if you go to like the first curriculum, you learn everything you need to know how to play chess. And then on, like all the rules, like you just learn how to play the game. And then from then on, I just been thinking about like why, like chess is just such an overwhelming game for so many people. Even when people learn how to play and it's just kind of like, okay, I know how the pieces move, but like what's next? How do I actually make sense out of this game? And kind of make the game more, like start building up on that, make the game more approachable, more accessible to everyone. And then as I'm moving on, like having things for like different levels, like 1600, 1800. So I've been going through a lot of tournament games. You can make amazing amount of puzzles out of like so many games, you know, high level games, low level games. It's just when you play through a game, like even a game ends in a draw at some pawn endgame, and you just go make a few moves, and then you see there's like something super instructive or some blunder at some point. And then so I've been working on creating like a puzzles database. Actually, after I listened to Anna Muzyczyk interview with you, I just went through her games. I just have an engine on and I'm just playing through her games. I started making puzzles out of her games. Nice. I just have so many like checkmates and like tactics just based on her games. And then I chose like another player and I did the same thing. So I'm like trying to create a database. I think by now I've broken them down into categories. I think now I have like around 900 of those.
That sounds kind of fun for that to be like your day job, just like design materials all day.
I've been thinking and like it just takes me a while to just come up with comprehensive things. And I have like thinking about what kind of lessons each level will have. And now, I mean, what I'm doing right now, it's still a little broad. Like I have like all these databases with like tactics, and then next I have to like start putting them in categories and thinking about like what's appropriate for what level. And actually I saw this like suggestion on Twitter. I don't even remember who posted it. And they said like when you're getting to like 2200 or 2000 level, like there are books that come when they give you like practical examples, right, to play out. And then he was like, how come like, does anyone know of any book that offers this for lower rated players? And I was like, oh, that's actually a good idea. So this is something that I want to do, just have this section of some positions that for the users to just play it out and practice. Because sometimes, you know, you're solving a puzzle and like the puzzle ends with like you win a piece. And I'm like, okay, but for if you're like 900, 800 rated, like winning a piece is usually kind of meaningless, right? You're not going to convert 100% of the time. So those are the things that you need to practice. And yeah, there are like day-to-day things that come up, and like I have to, you know, like discussing how this will look for the users, how to make it user-friendly, and like how the app is going to look. Kind of things that I never thought about in my life, actually to consider it, to discuss it, which is really interesting to work on something from ground up and just build something and hopefully something for people to enjoy. And an important task for me. I've taken up this project, which is a very large project. So I'm just trying to make it accessible for people.
Sounds great. Yeah. And the Kickstarter I read, this might even be an old number, but it was funded with like $19.9 million or something. Like just insane level.
$1.9. It's like $19.9. Like that's a lot of money.
That makes more sense. 1.9. My apologies. And so it sounds like, so it's basically a chess startup. So you're going to the office every day, and the other early stage employees are there with you each day.
Yeah. There's six of us in the office. We have six full time employees. I mean, they're all very nice people, and it's nice to work in a small company. And there's a lot of communication, and like we have this meeting. I mean, it's very unusual for me because like I haven't done this and like this kind of full time job before. As I mentioned, yeah. I was self employed. I wasn't just non employed for all my whole life.
Have you had non-chess jobs, Tatyev? I don't know if this came up in our other interview. I don't think it did.
Have I done what?
Have you done jobs that, like, outside of chess? Have you worked at a restaurant? Or, I mean, I know you went to university for a while.
Yeah, yeah, I have done some other jobs. I think there was a point in my life I was just kind of going through motions of life, and I just didn't know what my relationship with chess was going to be. So I've had some other jobs, but not like a 9-to-5 full-time job.
Gotcha. And with the curriculum, so I understand you're finding tons of material and finding ways to present it to broad range of chess levels. And, you know, I've seen a couple of the videos for Startup, the primary product of Bright Lab. So it's like a computer. I mean, it's like a, I'm struggling with the words, this being an audio only podcast, but it's like a physical chess set, obviously, where it lights up and tells you where the pieces move. So with the materials that you're designing, Tatyev, how is that going to be, like, how are people supposed to consume it? Do they set up the positions on the board, or is it something that they read or watch videos, or how does it work?
I mean, it's going to be interactive lessons. So there's going to be connected to an app, and it's also going to be connected to the board. So, I mean, it will be both using, I mean, some of it will be just app only, some of it will be both.
Okay. And I mean, I do want to follow backers.
Sorry, go ahead.
Is it still taking backers?
You can pre-order it, but the Kickstarter has ended, so you can pre-order it on the website.
Gotcha. And then I didn't mean to cut you off. Were you going to say something else?
I do want to make use of the board because, you know, I did grow up studying on a board, and I do, like, every time I'm solving puzzles, like, I always set them up. When I'm reviewing openings on a computer, I feel like it does nothing for me. I just click remove, and then, like, sometimes I'm just like, what did I just look at? So I just really enjoy, like, studying on a board. So I think it's just such a big benefit to have a board while you're studying chess. And I think it's just a better way of learning.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of that seems to be the consensus of people that I interview, even though some people seem okay with the digital only lifestyle.
Yeah. Maybe this new generation, but, like, I don't know. Or maybe they just play more online. But I think, like, when I was playing in all this, like, online tournaments, like Online Olympiad and what else did we play? Okay, like this, what was this? The Women's Speed Chess Championship. Or, like, before those rounds, like, I would go on my computer, and because I was playing, or, like, even US Women's Championship when we played online last year, like, I would do, like, a couple of puzzle rushes or something just to get my brain working and used to, like, solving chess on a computer. But when I'm playing over the board tournament, like, I like to review my openings on the board, and I also like to do a puzzle, like solve a puzzle before the game. So, like, my brain starts to work, and, like, I get used to, like, thinking about chess, like, on a physical board.
Yeah, I think especially, yeah, before tournaments, I think it can't hurt to do that.
And I also, when I talk to a lot of people, they would tell me, like, well, I don't have anyone to play with. I want to play with, like, my girlfriend or, like, my boyfriend, like, my partner or, like, my kids. But, like, they don't know how to play. Like, I know how to play. They don't know how to play. So they don't want to play me because they know, you know, they're going to lose. But I want to teach them. I don't know how to teach them. So it kind of, it's a way for them to, like, bridge this gap, because, like, if you're giving the other person assistance, you know, then they're getting some help, like, they get computer assistance. I mean, they still have to make their own decisions, but at least you're bridging this gap, and, like, it's a way for you to, you know, like, spend time with, like, your partner or your kids, and, you know, like, and then you don't have to be on your phone if you're playing on a physical board, and, you know, you can, like, enjoy the game and, like, actually try to teach someone who feels, like, completely intimidated by chess.
Sounds good. And what's the ETA for the product being available? I'm sure it's a fluid thing.
Yeah, I mean, there's some delays, as there is with everything. Like, everything is just being delayed. So,
yeah.
February.
Okay. And of course, Levon Aronian is the brand ambassador. How did that come about, if you're able to say or are aware of how it did?
Yeah, our founder, he got like, they were all, like, all the four founders of the company, Oh, okay. Like who were at the beginning with the company? They all work for Garmin, and they were all in product product design. So I mean, like not product design, product development. And so like they worked on developing a few products. So they felt like, you know, they knew how to do it. So the founder, like he went to MIT and he got a business degree, and there was like a special program for people who already know. Who already like have a career and like they're trying to get like an MBA. So like through Armenian connections, he was talking to a friend and he was like, oh, I'm like trying to start this company. And then of course it's like, oh, I know Levon Aronian. And that's how they connected to Levon. And that's how they connected to our chess academy. You know, got this email that was forwarded to me. So, and you know, this one email led me to be moving to Kansas City.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it sounds pretty interesting, a whole different world than what you've been living in your time in the U.S.
Yeah, it's very different. But I mean, the city is starting to grow on me. I think I was very resistant to liking the city when I first moved here. I was just determined that I was not going to like it. But it's starting to grow on me. It's a small, compact city, but it has these neighborhoods and has some art scene. And I don't know, just like little pockets with little things going on. Then I'm starting to realize that places like LA and New York are more of the exception, and cities are like Kansas City, and like places like LA are like very unique and very special. So I'm like, okay, this is like, I cannot just compare everything to how things are in LA. Like this is like more how most people live.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of experience with Kansas City directly, but the Midwest generally, I mean, people are very nice. Like there's a more pure than LA, I would say, even though, of course, LA has a lot going for it, obviously. But
yeah, I mean, okay, obviously there's some shallowness with people in LA in some level. But yeah, I mean, I actually met quite a few people who have moved to Kansas City who are not like native Kansas Cityans. I don't know. They're not native to Kansas City. So a lot of people have moved here. And I think there are reasons people are coming here. There are some headquarters here. So I think the job market is quite good. So I think, and then the fact that a lot of some people have moved here, that I think they're also open to other people and making friends.
Excellent. Well, I'm sure you'll be fine. I'm would love to chat in another couple of years and hear all about Bright Labs' continued success. And you're having become the mayor of Kansas City.
The mayor of Kansas City.
But before we let you go, Tatyev, we have two Patreon mailbag questions that I'd like to ask you, which I did send to you in advance, full disclosure. So first, since you were discussing sort of the challenges of designing a curriculum for players of a different level. So the first one is kind of along those lines. So this one is from Richard Davidson. So thank you for the support, Richard. And Richard asks a specific sort of chess evaluation type question. So I'm going to dig into it. He says, when there are several candidate moves to consider, we're told to calculate several moves ahead for each candidate. But to choose which candidate move to make, we have to decide which resulting position is better. Material differences are easy enough to value, but what other factors should go into a position evaluation? Do you come up with a numerical evaluation like the computer does, or could you suggest a checklist to use when evaluating a position?
Well, I mean, first I would say this is like a really good thing to do, because I think a lot of people don't do this work. They just, I think like it's very tempting to calculate, like if you successfully calculate a long line, I think like you're like, oh, I calculated this line and you just play it. So I think it's a very good thing to do to like evaluate the positions and compare them to each other. So obviously your main thing is you don't want to end up in a worse position than where you started. So the numerical, the piece value is of course there. But then after that, you have to, I mean, it's kind of hard to say like generally, of course, depends on the position, but then like look at the position where you started, what were the problems, what were the good things about your position. And, sometimes the few candidate move you calculate, maybe the difference is just a matter of preference and you just have to make a decision. But then, you know, you, like maybe you want to consider some things, like you don't want to end up with like bad pieces. You don't want to completely ruin the, like, did one of these lines completely ruin my pawn structure? And also consider like what kind of position are you striving for, and like, are you striving for a more dynamic position? Are you trying to kind of calm the position down? Like maybe if you start in like a slightly worse position, maybe you're looking for dynamics. Like, does this one give me better chances? Does it complicate things? Or like maybe if you're calculating several winning lines and then you're like, they both look winning, but one of them looks like very complex and the other one is a little bit calmer. And maybe, you know, that's the one you need, because when you're winning, you don't want complications. You want to kind of want to keep things calm. So yeah, I would say like compare the direction you're taking the position, like, are you changing the nature of the position, and like the value of the relative value of the pieces, are you like ruining your pieces, are you making them, improving them, like the exchanges that you're making, and maybe your king safety and structure. I mean, it's all like very general things, but
I mean, to me, king safety, I mean, I don't know Richard's rating level, his chess experience level, so a lot of it depends on that, but based on the nature of his question, I'm gonna guess he's under 1500 USCF. Mm-hmm. I would say for sure, and maybe lower than that. I think king safety is a big one. I mean, what I tell my students of that level, Tatyev, or have told them, is that like king safety is right, and correct me if you disagree with any of this, but to me, king safety and material are kind of like at the top of the totem pole in terms of evaluating a position. And below that, you have things like the mobility of the pieces and pawn structure and stuff like that. I certainly don't think in a numerical evaluation, or at least I didn't used to, although if you use an engine enough, you kind of start to now, or at least start to guess, but it's not like natural for anyone who came up in like a non-engine way. Mm-hmm. And more experienced players don't generally use checklists, but like you say, Tatyev, I think it's a good idea if you're struggling with like how to evaluate a position to start out systematic.
Yeah. I mean, like, chess has changed so much and these things have become so relative, and engines have changed chess so much. I was listening to this interview with Kasym Can, well, not infamous interview with Kasym Canov.
Yeah,
and that was like so interesting, like, to hear like his views on like the engines and how they have changed like the top level chess.
So yeah, let me just hop in and explain. Grandmaster Rustam Kazymjanov, who I interviewed on Perpetual Chess, great interview coming off of the first half of the candidates that was canceled in 2020, and he of course was Grandmaster Fabiano Caruana's trainer. And the interview that Tatyev's referring to, he recently did an interview with, I believe it was Chess Base, where he said that he and Fabiano are no longer working together. COVID kind of put a stress on their working relationship. Just wanted to give that context for any listeners who didn't catch that. But
no. Yeah. He had this other interview, in Russian, you know, where like it was all over. Right, yeah. Fabi is not okay. I don't want to finish the sentence, but that interview.
Well, yeah, I mean, you might as well, because again, this caused a brouhaha, you could say. And I mean, so basically he said that he didn't think that Fabi was as talented as some of the other top players. I'm paraphrasing, but I think that was the gist of it. Is that your recollection, Tatya?
Well, I mean, the interview was in Russian, so I was actually, I mean, this was a great interview, by the way. So if anyone is a Russian speaker, I would like definitely recommend it. It was so fascinating to listen to this interview, and there's like so many interesting points, like different subjects they talked about. I mean, the way they came to this point, and this is me translating too, so if something gets lost in translation, it's not on me. Like Levitov, who was interviewing him, he was asking him about Fabi, like, who is like, he was just like curious about Fabiano, and then he was like, the interviewer just at some point says like, I feel like basically like says like, I feel like Fabiano should become a world champion, it's only right, like, it's just. And then like Kasym Canov is like, why, like, he may or he may not. And then he was like, well, I just feel like a player of his caliber, it's just like, should become a world champion, it's like the right thing to happen. And then Kasym Canov was like, well, I don't know, there's like other players who are like more talented than him. then he just says like, I mean, he does say complimentary things about Fabi. He just says like his calculation is amazing. When he's in good form, he's just impossible to compete against him. But obviously, yeah, you just take that segment and then share it on social media. Obviously, it becomes...
Yeah, people kind of ran with that as an insult. And I don't necessarily take it that way because, like, what Fabi has achieved is kind of... It's indisputable what he's achieved.
Right.
So if you say he's not as talented as other people, in a sense, it might be a compliment because you might be saying he worked harder, you know? So I didn't feel like it was like, oh, shots fired, you know, that Fabi's not as talented. But I can understand why people would say that, because what I saw a lot of people online on Twitter saying was they were kind of like ridiculing the notion that Fabi could not be talented because, I mean, he's been number two in the world. He played for the world championship.
Right.
Like, whatever talent is, he has to have it. But anyway, I mean, I took Russian in college, but it's terrible now. So I can't watch the interview anyway. So, I don't want to opine too much on, secondhand, interpretations.
Yeah. I also am not going to defend what was said. I mean, okay. Fabiana is also my friend. So I don't like anything, you know, negative said about him. So like, I'm not going to defend what he said. I think that was like completely unnecessary to say, but his point was like, basically saying like the way he calculates and the way he just solves position is just amazing, and like that's where his strength is, not just like this natural talent or whatever he was trying to imply.
I mean, I always do find Kashemjanov compelling, even though I don't know. I would have to see it verbatim to see whether I agree, and no one should care if I agree anyway. But I mean, this has been an interesting sideline, but getting back to Richard's question, Richard, I just have to say, this is obviously, I love doing this audio only podcast, but this is one where you might be better served asking someone on Twitch or something. I'm trying to think if there are any resources I can think of that give good advice for how to evaluate a position. I'm putting you on the spot here, Tatya, but can you think of anything?
I mean, there is like the checkpoint, like, you know, like piece, oh my God.
Like Augard's thing?
Like material, that's the word I'm looking for. Like material, king safety, right? Like structure pieces. Like you can go through a checklist like that. But I think, things are relative, right? Like if you destroy your pawn structure, but you're checkmating your opponent, like who cares that you destroyed your pawn structure? So
yeah,
like tactics take precedence in chess. Like this, like if you like that's how chess has changed, right? Like you can take an engine and just make almost everything playable now. And the reason we ended up on that interview is because we're talking about computer evaluation. And the reason I would say it's so interesting is because when Kashemjanov was talking about this like computer preparation, and like if you think about how you can prepare, he was just basically saying like everyone has the same access, everyone has like same openings, right? Because they have the same computers. And then it says you're looking at the line, and then the first four moves, they give you zero, and then like the last move says like plus 0.5. So you're not going to look at it. And then it's like, but actually, if you look at it and you keep digging deeper, you can actually make this line workable to playable too. You just have to like put in this work. And then that's like, he was basically saying like, whoever does this work, it like gives them like extra, oh my God, why can't I come up with words? Like an edge.
Yeah,
because then you can surprise your opponent and, you know, they haven't looked at it and you're playing this line that maybe computer gives like a slight edge, but then through enough work, you can, like it changes its mind. And like another thing he said that was like super interesting that says, I think he was referring to like 2016 candidates when he was saying like, we had this term in our lexicon that computers don't understand a position, or like you can, you know, like look at a position, computer gives an evaluation, and now you're just like, oh, and the computer doesn't understand it, it's wrong. And he's like, no, that just doesn't exist. Like to prove a computer wrong, you need another computer to prove this computer wrong. So you cannot like throw this words around anymore. Obviously, this applies to like the top players, like for us, it's a little bit different because we just make so many mistakes, but they just play such pure chess most a lot of the times, like such concrete, and they barely make any mistakes.
Yeah, that's why, again, I mean, the World Championship will already be going by the time this comes out, but I can't wait to see what directions the openings go after these guys have been in the lab with, you know, 5 grandmasters each and the best engines in the world for 6 months or whatever it is. So Tatya, we just have one more mm-hmm. Patreon question with you. It's with our best question submitter of recent, Alex Friedman. Shout out to Alex. And he asks, he says, according to his database, your score against Grandmaster Alexander Shabalov is 3.5 out of 4, which according to my database as well. And in 3 of those games, you had the black pieces. What are your recollections from these games? And do you see the fear in Alex's eyes when you're playing him?
Actually, the score is 3.5, 1.5. I have lost to him. I guess it didn't make the database, but it was in some win over where he played Queen G4 early on. It was a very complex game, and I ended up losing. And I wasn't black in all of the games. One of the games was a Sicilian. That actually, that's the game that I really enjoyed because it was some kind of a Sicilian, but then it went into an end game. And like for me, for a Sicilian to go to in an end game, like I can lose the thread of the game. But I thought that was a very high quality game, and like I'm actually quite proud of that game. And like Shabalov is obviously a very strong player, but he also has the kind of style that I think allows him to lose more games. Gives room, you know, for lower rated players to beat him. So
Aggressive. Yeah. And what do you consider your best wins, Tatya?
My 3 wins against Shabalov.
I don't blame you. I played him recently and it did not go well. nice guy though, of course.
My best wins. So obviously this last round game against Crouch, I think. Just psychologically, it was just such an important win for me. One of my favorite, absolute favorite wins was 2010 Olympiad in the last round because we still had hopes of medaling. Actually, we tied for 3rd. We didn't win a medal on tiebreaks, but winning this game, like winning for your team is just such a good feeling. So we ended up beating India. We tied for 3rd. We didn't get a medal, but that was just such an amazing feeling. Winning my games in the World Cup and actually qualifying to the 2nd round, that was a great feeling. What else? Oh my god,
that's plenty. That's
yeah.
That's
great. I mean, if you ask me what my worst loss is, there'd be like way more.
All right, well, we'll save that for next time, Tatya. It's been great to catch up, and wish you luck with Bright Labs and Chess Up. Is there anything you'd like to say before we call it a night here, Tatya?
Actually, we had a discount code for anyone who wants to pre-order.
Oh, great. So let's hear it. Yeah.
Discount code is perpetual, so you'll get 10% off if you pre-order on Bright Labs. And yeah, I mean, I'm excited if someone does pre-order, and if like, I don't know, people have suggestions on, because I've never done a course from scratch. I'm like excited to do it. If like I don't get something right, you know, I'd like to improve on it. And you know, I'm hoping to make a product that people will enjoy and they can improve their game and you know, like stay entertained and improve their game. And this is something like I really care about. So I would, you know, I would like to hear some feedback.
Excellent. Yeah. And the site is Bright Labs. That's spelled BRYGHTLABS.com. We'll of course put the link in the show description and you know what, Tatya, I'm going to go ahead and order one. It looks cool. So thanks for coming on, and I hope we can catch up again in a couple years when you're the mayor of Kansas City.
Yeah, that sounds great. Thanks for having me.
Perpetual Chess is proud to be a member of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Be sure to check out their sports and pop culture related podcasts as well. I also, as always, would like to thank Matthew Passy for producing the show. Without Matthew, Perpetual Chess would not exist. And I want to thank everyone who listens to the show, whether it be on your own without telling anyone about it, keeping it secret, or if you're helping to spread the word, all the better, whether it be telling a friend about a particularly impactful interview, or whether it be writing a positive review online, all of that stuff helps get the word out and helps Perpetual Chess continue to grow. But most of all, of course, I want to thank those that provide financial support to Perpetual Chess. Without you all, Perpetual Chess would not be possible in its current form. And I would like to give special thanks to the following people and entities. Here comes the list. Chessable.com, David Lazarus of Lasman Chess, coach of Dave's Young Tigers on Lee Chess, Quality Chess Books, the Capital City Chess Club, the Abysmal Depths of Chess blog, Adaptive Interactive Web Designs and Services, the Apprenchess Twitch channel, A Needy Deer, Austin Clough, Benjamin Porteau, Bill Sigler, Kathy Carr, Chad Oliver, the Charlotte Chess Center, the Chess Central's Chess blog, chessmood.com, Chris Flanagan, Chris Lott, Dan O'Hanlon, Daniel He, Danny Davidson, David Mitchell, I am Dimitri Schneider, Douglas Wilson, I am Eric Rosen, Farhan Tharwar, Faraz Sawaf, Gary Foreman, Glenn Downing, Greg Harfst, Greg Shahadi, Gregory Gulick, Hampus Axelson, James Kennedy, Jay Garrison, Jeff Martinson, Jeff Schaefer, Jeremy Nielsen, John Jernigan, John MacArthur, Kevin Forsyth, Kevin Gilmore, Kevin O'Callaghan, Kevin Pryor, King Cell, the King's Crusher YouTube channel, the Law Offices of Stuart Katz, Matthew Feeney, Michael Kahn, FM Michael Oblin, Mr. Mike Shahadi, Michael Sullivan, the famous Mr. Dodgy, the Nerdnase Twitch channel, Perry McManus, GM Peter Prohaska, Peter Sodi, Philip Vlummins, the Playmore Chess Academy of the Hamden Chess Club, Ray Lillywhite, Reuven Fisher, Rick Rivas, Robert Hansen, Ross Crossland, the Seattle Chess Club, Shane Unger, Stefan Kelty, Stephen Martinez, Sven Gierson, Thomas Tachenko, Todd Bryant of StrongChess.com, Todd Kennedy, The Vintage Patzers, which is a Chess.com improver group, Wayne Beam, and I also would like to thank the following, hashtag ChessPunks, who are the adult improvers on Chess Twitter, Ace Vallega, Adam Fowler, Adam Johansson, Adam Ralph of ChessEngland.com, Adrian Gutierrez, Al Hastings, Alan and Maggie Sue, Alex Pejas, Alexander Markovitz, Antonio Cancino, Antonio Leonfort, FM Andre Tarakov, Dr. Andrew Perry, Angus McLeod, Barry Hessian, Bill Gruber, Bill Juniper, Bill Moran, Bill Trammell, Brad and Andy Rosen, Brandon Halseed, Brian Chase, Brian Mullis, Bruce Scott, Bruno Johnson, Brian Tillis of Palm Beach Chess, Cameron Davis, Ken Kabadayi, Chad Hilton, Chad Likens, of Rose City Chess in Portland, the Chess Dojo, Chess for Charity Jacksonville, Chess Patzer Spain, Dr. Charles Snodgrass, Chris Kiefer, Chris Wainscott, Christopher Baumgartner, Christopher Chabri, Christopher Wood, I am Christoph Zalecki, aka Chess Explained, Coach J's Chess Academy, Costa Carras, Courtney Fry, Craig Mallon, Daniel Ginsburg, Daniel Naylor, Dave Best, Dave Saylor, David Blaskacek, David Brown, David Gores, David Hamblin, David Cramley, David Peterson, Dennis Parrish, FM Donnie Ariel, Dwayne Edmonds, Ed Daly, Ed Mead, Edwin Rodriguez, Eric Baldwin, Ethan Smith, Evan Rosenberg, Ewan Richardson, Ian Mason, Felipe Mayo Perea, Fox Valley Chess Club, Francis Letard Lavoie, Frank Tortoris, MD, Frank Zananis, Gary Andrews, Gary Lewis, Gautam Narula, Gene Stewart, George Foote, George Harris, Giovanni Russo, Gregory Higgins, Han Schutt, Harish Srinivasan, Howard Vihan, Jacob Kovach, Jason Apollo, Jason Murray, Jacques Parry, James Aspinwall, James Bonastia, James Muir, Jason Woolham, Jay Tuttle, Jaydeep Chakrabarty, Jeff Anderson, Jeff Davis, Jeffrey Martello, Yep Hoyland, Jerry Wells, Jesse DeCumos, Jesse McNulty, Jim Jones, Jim Ratliff, Jim Sadler, Joe DeSano, Joe Valdez, Joel Thomas Ramos, John McAdams, John Tully, Juan Almaguer, Dr. John Fallon, John Fernandez, John Fontaine, John Hartman, John Jeffrey, John McMurtry, Jonathan Bannister, Jonathan Slater, John Quist, John Tully, Jose Rodriguez, Justin Gardner, Justin Goodfellow, Jen Shahadi, Joel Rocky, John Thompson, Grandmaster Josh Friedel, I am Kari Christensen, WGM Katerina Nemsova, Kelly Palmer, Krishna Gopala Krishnan, Kyle McAvoy, Larry Cook, Larry Reiferth, Lars Wiesen, Macaulay Peterson, Maria Emiljanova, aka Photo Chess, Mark Chaves, Mark Fitzpatrick, Mark Miller, Mark Wilkins, Marco Butolovich, Martin Knudsen, Martin Krug, Matt Ferrari, Matthew Coughlin, Matthew Tedesco of SeattleChessMeetup.org, Matthias Plock, Mechanics Institute Chess Club of San Francisco, Michael Allard, Michael Hudson, Mike Clem, Mitchell Fabian, Nate Goebel, Nate Solon, Neil Bruce, Nigma Malajanov, Nicholas Isabel, Olaf Mueller-Michaels, Pablo Davila, GM Pascal Charbonneau, Passy Passanen, Paul Bain, Paul Clarkson, Paul Eckert, Paul Sweeney, Paulo Santana, Peter Lux, Queenside Management Limited in Switzerland, Randall Montgomery, Randy Temple, Ricky Grijalva, Richard Hallenbach, Richard McCormick, Richard Tucker, Robert Callahan, Robert Turner, Robert Wall, Robert Wilson, Rory Coleman, Ryan Berg, Samson Teaches Chess, Satyajit Malagu, the Say Chess YouTube channel and publishing empire, Scott McKinnon, Scott Rose, Sean Krause, Sebastian Finsterwater, Sergey Makagon, Seth Ruzica, Seth Will, Sean Tracy, Silver Knights in Richmond, Simon Schmidt, Stefan Roller, Stephen Miller and Tom George, WGM Tatia Vabrahamian, Terry King, Thomas Brown, Tim Brennan of TacticsTime.com, Tim Seymour, Timothy Ha, FM Timothy Wall, Tobiah Rex, Tom Edsel, Tommy Farron, Tony Rotella, Tyron Price, Victor Beauchamp, William Brock, William Peterson, FM Zhao Cheng of Chess1000.com, Zachary Hoskin, and Zhivkor Stoyanov. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Podcast Network.
Lucky Land Casino asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky?
No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.